It's time for the Mr. Sports Show on ESPN 94.7. Call the show now at 330-744-0947. Now, here's your host, Mr. Sports.
And we are starting a brand new work week, the Mr. Sports Show, your sports, music, comedy, variety, everything in between, local show, Vincente, a little something for everybody. Todd Hartley with me as my special co-host today because I'm going to let Todd handle most of our top of the show breaking news. We are going to have the elite attorney, Subodh Chandra, on from the Chandra law firm out in, I believe, you guys in Cleveland, Subodh?
Yes.
Okay. Well, Todd, you want to take it away? You got some questions?
Sure. So, first of all, thank you so much for taking the time this morning. Want to give some background on Attorney Chandra. You're the co-vice chair of the Special Ohio Advisory Committee for the U.S. Commission on Civil Rights. You've also been an assistant U.S. attorney for the Department of Justice in Cleveland from 1999 to 2002. You were Cleveland's law director and prosecuting attorney in Cleveland from 2002 to 2005. You also ran for attorney general in the state of Ohio, and you're also the father of triplet sons. So with that introduction, welcome to ESPN 94.7.
Thank you. Thanks for having us on.
This is a very troubling case. We're talking about the Ursuline football hazing case and some of the overarching facts, and correct me if I'm wrong, there were 41 players and three coaches that were on a football team camp trip that took place from June 12th to June 20th earlier this year, and that trip went from Alabama, Florida, and Tennessee. Do I have that right so far?
Yeah, although we are developing information that the Alabama allegations may have been in Georgia, and so we're still investigating that. We may be amending the complaint for that and other reasons. But yes, in general, you're talking about a 9-day football camp trip covering three states.
And the school was notified, I believe, by the mother who you're representing and her son. The school was notified around June 22nd?
It was right at the end of the camp trip.
And then she had a meeting with school officials on, I believe it was June 23rd at noon?
Right after notifying the coaches.
And by the way, I just want the audience to know, I apologize in advance if this sounds like a deposition or a cross-examination.
Yeah,
I want to apologize for the start.
I didn't know there were going to be dates on the exam.
Yeah, I know. My apologies. So my goal today and our goal today is to make sure that this interview is instructive for the audience and that they understand this is, as you just mentioned, Attorney Chandra, this is in the infancy of a case. You're developing new information. I mean, one of the states may be Alabama, it may be Georgia. And this could be a months-long or even years-long process.
That is fair, yeah.
With that in mind, this is the first interview that you've granted. And again, we can't thank you enough for your time. Since the season was canceled abruptly on Friday, and I know you can't say much about it, but being that it is the first interview since the season was canceled, what's your initial reaction to that?
Well, I want to be clear that for our client, that was never an objective of the litigation. The litigation objective is accountability across the board, up and down, to any people who were involved in the alleged hazing and sexual abuse and dissemination of child pornography, kidnapping, and other allegations set forth in the complaint. Now, a key part of accountability, of course, for our clients is ensuring that any players that were involved in the alleged activities in any way are held accountable and that this isn't all just swept under the rug, along with accountability for coaches, administrators, anyone who was involved, who knew, who covered up. And so in those circumstances, it might be a natural consequence of that the season would have to be canceled, but that was not an underlying objective. The objective was accountability for individual players, coaches, and administrators who may have been involved in the alleged activity.
So can we, again, I'm not a lawyer, I'm not going to play one on the radio, but can we address something? Because there are a lot of terms that are going to be used that folks are going to see in the media and in reports and maybe here on the radio or on different podcasts. You make allegations in a complaint. Can you explain to the audience in layman's terms the difference between an allegation and a fact when it comes to a filing?
Well, sure. So we as lawyers have an obligation when we file a civil complaint on behalf of clients to have a good faith belief as to the truth of the things being asserted. But that doesn't necessarily mean that they're true, just as when a grand jury indicts somebody for a crime, that doesn't necessarily mean that it's true. The people that make those allegations in the civil sphere, in the criminal sphere, are still obligated to then set forth evidence in the process that then unfolds, and to submit that evidence to a fact finder, whether that's a jury or whether that's a judge. So at this point, everything that's in the allegations is something that we as lawyers have signed our name to, believing that based on our investigation, we have a good faith belief for being able to prove this, but it is not proof in and of itself. Now, we did intersperse the complaint with some of the proof, showing a little ankle, so to speak. So we, for example, had screenshots of photos there. We made representations in the complaint that we have some of the videos alleged to be child pornographic videos that were taken on the trip of some of these hazing sexual abuse incidents, and that we have those. We've represented to the court that we have them. We're not allowed to make a representation like that without risking our law licenses and sanctions if that kind of statement representation of the court isn't true. And we do have those. We do have those in our possession, custody, and control. But how it all shakes out, that's ultimately up to the due process that now unfolds in federal court.
Mr. Chandra, so over the weekend, I watched a video. I happen to know the guy. He put it on an extensive video defending the school, saying that the entire situation, according to his sources and according to what he knows, he's a father of a football player, was entirely overblown, basically dismissed it as nothing more than hogwash and left it in the court of public opinion for Ursuline to look bad. What's your response to that?
Well, I don't want to say too much about that. I think I saw the video that you're talking about, and I would just generally, my general reaction as someone who, along with co-counsel, is reviewing the evidence, including video footage, is that that individual either has no idea what he's talking about or is downplaying facts that he may be aware of. I don't know. I don't know what position he's in. If you listen to the video carefully, you'll hear at the beginning of it, he says some words to the effect of, from what I was told. From what I was told, that's hearsay. That's nonsense. He wasn't there. He doesn't know. And I can't say more beyond that because he also, in addition to being a coach at the school, is also a parent of student on the team. And so I don't want to get into the details about what that individual making that video knew or should have known or could have known, but it'll all shake out in the evidentiary process. But he certainly did give us some breadcrumbs as to the offered defense. And that was very helpful, and we appreciate it because we're going to be able to take it apart in our view.
Well, and you mentioned that, and again, we're visiting with Attorney Subodh Chandra, who's representing the victim in the Ursuline football hazing case, at least one of the victims in the Ursuline hazing case. You mentioned that, and we talked about the process. You have filed a complaint. Ursuline has yet to file in federal court their response. Are they in a 20-day response window, 30-day response window? What's their timeline on that for a response?
Well, they would typically, after service, have a 30-day response window. We've requested waivers of service that, if signed and returned, and we anticipate they will be by the school and the diocese, and maybe on behalf of the administrators as well, they would then have 60 days. So they have quite a bit of time to file what are called the answers to the complaint, in which they would, you know, admit or deny certain allegations, allegation by allegation. So there's still quite a bit of time for them to respond, and we're going to be engaging in professional dialogue with their counsel to figure out the most efficient paths forward in the litigation.
And you mentioned the conversation that's now playing itself out on social media and with videos being posted. Curious, in covering cases like this in my career, because it's a private school, do private school as opposed to public school employees, agents, that type of thing, have any kind of immunity defense or sovereign immunity type situation that maybe public school employees may have as opposed to private school?
That's an excellent question. And you're right that public school employees often enjoy a kind of governmental immunity under state law for acts of negligence. Not always, but often do. And that is not the case for private schools and private school employees. They don't enjoy that kind of governmental immunity.
And that would include coaches, correct?
that would include coaches, again, assuming that one could prove whatever the relevant allegations are.
So you've noted in the federal lawsuit multiple criminal acts occurring in multiple states. And this is going to get into the weeds a little bit, but it also underpins the case. Is that one of the many reasons that you chose federal court as opposed to state court as your venue with the blanket of law that is there with Title IX?
That's one of the reasons, but keep in mind that the lead cause of action in the two complaints that have been filed, one over hazing and one over alleged abuse by a football player and then cover up by the administration of an assault and sexual harassment against a girl at Ursuline, those two suits, their lead causes of action are Title IX. Title IX is the federal Civil Rights Act provision that prohibits sexual harassment and sex discrimination within a school that receives federal funding. And the information we have suggests that Ursuline received at least some federal funding and would be subjected to Title IX. There's also in the hazing statute, if I remember correctly, there is a statute involving the dissemination of intimate images, which is a federal violation. So there are some actual federal statutory civil rights causes of action in addition to the fact that you've got a multi-state issue here.
Yeah, I believe that is made, and I'll get into the specific complaint. I believe that's in page 90 to 105 in that general vicinity is when you all address that in the complaint. Having covered a case in Pennsylvania with a baseball team, very similar fact pattern, in their federal case, they also entered a statute with the idea of failure to rescue. Does Ohio, Tennessee, Alabama, Florida, anything like that? I mean, again, you've enjoined a lot of statutes in this. I was just curious what your thoughts were on the idea of failure to rescue.
I do not know offhand whether Ohio has a cause of action or any of the other states involved have that. We can certainly look into that. There is, in the second complaint involving the girl alleged victim, that refers to the failure to supervise. In that instance, not just failure to supervise coaches, but a distinct cause of action for failure to supervise children appropriately. And we may see, as I said, we're anticipating amending the first complaint, which is already 200 pages, based on additional information that we've obtained and additional research that we've done to include additional causes of action.
There's a Attorney Shabod Chandra
with us. Mr. Chandra, there is a coach who was alleged to have had, let's say, mischievous history involved with this. Is that Plenty Factors is based solely on this and helping you prosecute your case against the school?
Yes, so two of the coaches are actually alleged to have had dubious backgrounds. And in the instance of one of the coaches, head coach Reardon, who was rehired by Ursuline after originally leaving, the complaint alleges, under a cloud of circumstances. There's even more specific allegations there, and specifically what's alleged is that a senior diocesan official actually recommended against the rehiring of Coach Reardon, and the president of the school, Father Murphy, insisted, all in the name of football, and that the bishop, then bishop, overruled the objection of the diocesan official and permitted the school to go ahead and rehire, despite problems in the background in dealing with students and handling them. And, you know, again, those details are laid out in the complaint, in the complaint's allegations. So what that leads to is causes of action in the complaint on hazing that deal with negligent or reckless hiring, retention, supervision, training of coaches.
You also allege in the complaint that Coach Reardon, I believe it was his son that was also on the trip, they stayed in the same room on the trip. Is that verified in the complaint?
That is alleged in the complaint, yes, that they stayed in the same room.
What's your takeaway?
And therefore, his son was not subjected to hazing.
Not going to editorialize yet. We'll do that post-interview, but that's we'll get back to that one later. Can you confirm law enforcement investigations are underway in Alabama, Florida, and Tennessee?
Let me just tell you my understanding. We are aware that there is a federal, state, and local joint task force working on investigating this matter. Our clients have been fully cooperative with that. I don't want to say too much about that because I don't want to do anything to interfere with that investigation. But I can just share with you a couple of observations. First, it's clear from the questioning of the officials of our clients who've been fully cooperative with the investigation. It's very clear that they have been in touch with authorities in other jurisdictions. I mean, just clear from the questioning. Second, it is clear from the questioning, that just based on my observation as an ex-federal prosecutor and you know, city attorney, it's pretty clear to me that the scope of their investigation is broad and that they're doing a great deal of work, and it requires a great deal of work. So I do want to say to the public out there that has been frustrated, and it's understandable that people are frustrated and our own clients can get frustrated about the pace of law enforcement investigations. I am persuaded, at least, that they are trying to be very thorough and careful and broad in their investigation. If you think about what investigators have to do in these circumstances, particularly when there's allegations about video evidence and photographic evidence, they have to go through the necessary steps, subpoenas and requests, to gather all the necessary electronic data and go through it. And when you're talking about this many children allegedly involved, including with the dissemination of images and videos, you're talking about a great deal of work. So I anticipate that they will need more time to do their work and be thorough, and our clients are satisfied that they're at least trying.
I don't know if you can confirm this or not, but that leads me into a follow-up where you've got DHS, the FBI, their cyber teams, their child crimes teams, their CSEA teams. And that would kind of dovetail to what you just said about a JTF involved in this.
Yeah, and I, when I used the word joint task force, I did not mean to say that there's some sort of formal structure.
No, but they are sharing information. They're working together.
Yes.
Collaboratively.
Yeah. Because our clients have been cooperating and representatives from relevant agencies are there.
So in reading the complaint in its entirety, I did not find a place that you allege where any coach or adult that was on that trip ever called law enforcement in either Alabama, Florida, Tennessee, and now you've shared maybe even Georgia, other than when they came back that the Youngstown Police Department was involved and so were children and youth. Is that accurate?
Yeah, the complaints are alleging that they did not fulfill their mandatory reporting obligations during the trip, but apparently there may have been some sort of a contact of law enforcement by the administrators after the return. But what the suit is alleging is that they didn't fulfill their own independent obligations to investigate, get to the bottom of it, and hold people meaningfully accountable.
The complaint alleges that the school began their investigation, I believe it was late June, based off that meeting with your client's family member. That began in June. And then it appears from the complaint and the allegations that no real substantive action was taken against players, coaches, and anybody involved. Is that also accurate?
Yeah, so it's our understanding, and I believe this is set out in the complaint, is that there was no meaningful discipline of anybody. Now, there may have been some very short suspensions of a couple of players who were then, you know, allowed to return quickly, but it's our understanding that that was a temporary measure and that was not actual discipline of the players, not actual, you know, this is your consequence for doing something or doing something serious. And I think what I would suggest, based on the additional information that's come public since then, that will be a part of our next steps in litigation and amending the complaint, is you see that the coaches had some, I don't know if it was a consequence, but some sort of consequence about a week ago, a week to 2 weeks ago, in which two coaches were placed on administrative leave, supposedly pending an investigation. So if the investigation was complete, why is that necessary? And then the third coach, Coach Reardon, apparently, they said, agreed to an indefinite suspension. Well, again, if investigations were complete and this was handled appropriately and there was appropriate discipline, why did they wait until after the suit was filed and there was public outcry before they actually took any action against the coaches? Those are the kinds of questions that we'll be pursuing in the litigation and will be the subject of a forthcoming complaint as the next step in the litigation.
So, and not to give away any legal strategy or anything that you all are doing, we talked about the window that the current named defendants have an opportunity to respond. Do you believe that in that interim period there's going to be a second amended complaint before the first response from the named defendants happens?
Yeah, I can't comment on that. What I can tell you is, and we've said this time and again throughout this matter since the suit was filed on September 2nd, since we filed the suit on September 2nd, additional alleged victims and additional alleged witnesses have been coming forward, have been providing valuable information. We assume not just to us, but possibly to law enforcement, and we are still analyzing all that information and determining what, if any, adjustments to the complaint need to be made. That process will take some time. So whether that happens before there winds up being a formal answer to the complaint by any of the defendants or whether it happens afterward, I can't say right now. But what I can say is it's very clear in the days since September 2nd that we will need to update the complaint, you know, maybe to correct some issues and maybe also likely also to supplement with additional information that we've learned. And then finally, you know, with additional information that has happened since September 2nd. That's called supplementing the complaint, not just amending it.
We're talking to Attorney Subodh Chandra from the Chandra Law Firm against the Ursuline School in regards to the hazing incident and lawsuits. Todd Bartley, my special co-host, who's read through the entire 200-page report. Is that what it is, Todd?
Yes.
200 pages. My God, you got more you got more patience than I do. I want to ask you this, though, Mr. Chandra. Has this encouraged more people to come forward? And do you anticipate that this will be a progressive thing to where you're going to find more students coming out of the woodwork because they were hesitant and reluctant or maybe fearful?
Well, I'll give you an example. On September 2nd, we filed the first 200-page hazing complaint. By September 4th, we heard from another alleged victim, the female student who alleged that she was sexually harassed and violently assaulted by a football player. And then by September 10th, that new complaint was filed, incorporating the first complaint by reference. We've heard from additional alleged victims, additional alleged witnesses, and we strongly encourage anyone else with information or personal experiences they wish to share to give us a call, contact us through our contact form securely at www.chandralaw.com, chandralaw.com. Every time we've been making that call to action, we've been hearing with people, some of whom have helpful information, some of whom do not, but it has been interesting that once the first suit was filed, there were additional people wanting to share their experiences at Ursuline, including claims about administrators not taking action as alleged in the second complaint. And people can read those in summaries of those and the actual complaints at our website as well via the blog.
As a follow-up, in preparation for this conversation this morning, I've actually reached out to the Vatican to see if they'd like to make a comment. Of course, we do have the first American Pope in the history of the Vatican. They have yet to respond back to this for a comment. I just want to go through some of the criminal acts that you've highlighted previously, and this and the severity of the potential charge on the criminal side, let alone what you're alleging in a civil complaint. I mean, you're talking anywhere from a first-degree felony, Class C felony, third-degree felony, to misdemeanors and potentially first offense non-criminal charges as well. As a former federal prosecutor, now as a civil litigator, and as a dad, I mean, what hat do you wear? And really, the emotions have to run the gamut for you in this when you're talking about hazing and potential sexual abuse, and then grown-ups not doing what they're supposed to do. What's the emotional spectrum for you in this as a former federal prosecutor and as a dad?
Well, I think my own feelings reflect those that you often see reflected on social media in response to this complaint, which is a lot of parents saying, listen, if this had happened to my child, I would have really lost it and would have maybe been over the top severe in my reaction. And I think most parents understand that. Most people of decency and goodwill understand that in terms of what's being alleged here. We have to let the process shake out. All I can just tell you is that in my career, it is always an honor for me and my team and my co-counsel to be entrusted with as solemn a representation as this, with matters as serious as this. And so, you know, we've been asked to be an instrument of our clients for obtaining accountability, and we take that very seriously, whether it's drawing on all of our prior professional experiences or whether it's as parents ourselves. We take that obligation very seriously to be entrusted with such a representation.
So we have about 5 minutes left with you, and again, we can't thank you enough for the time today. I know time is short, so I do want to kind of close a couple of different things. We mentioned Coach Dan Reardon. On page 162, there's a text message, I guess, to the team. I think it came in June 13th of 2025, and there's either a noise complaint or something's going on. And my takeaway was there was a text message as opposed to going to the rooms and checking on folks. And to me, it rang of an indifference. That's my editorializing, not yours in the complaint, but it's alleged that he failed to act. Is that accurate?
The suit is indeed alleging a kind of deliberate indifference on the part of the coaches and indeed on the part of the administration to the serious nature of these allegations. And humbly, I would submit to your audience that that has been borne out in the public statements of the school and of the diocese. You know, our response to their statements, including their most recent statement, promising and vowing a vigorous defense and claiming they did everything right while at the same time supposedly expressing a pious sympathy toward the victims, is that to our clients, those are all just empty words. You know, actions speak louder than words. And their statements keep raising as many discovery-related questions for the litigation as they answer. You know, we did everything, for example, we did everything we were supposed to. Well, then why did you wait until after litigation was filed to suspend a coach and put two others on administrative leave? Why has there been no alleged accountability for administrators? So every time they say something, our client's view is not only is that hurtful and harmful and gaslighting, which is how our clients view it, but it raises fundamental questions for the litigation that may be very difficult for the defendants to answer. But that's fine. Keep talking.
One of the words that has come out in multiple statements from the school is to parents in the community is partnership. We appreciate your partnership with us in this. I mean, for a litigator like yourself and a former prosecutor, that's litigation gold, is it not?
Well, just to step back, I think everything that they're saying has been litigation gold. So, as I said, just keep talking. I mean, for example, the video that you referred to of another coach, you know, looking the camera in the eye and talking from what he was told, this is true, that is true. Okay, well, who told you that? We're going to find out. And we expect that school to preserve every communication, every electronic communication. That's a coach talking. Now we expect every single communication from that coach, every text message, every social media message. We want to know what he was told, why he was told it, who told him, and presumably he talked to somebody he thought knew. Well, we're going to get all of it because what the complaint is alleging is cover-up. And from where our clients sit, this is alleged cover-up. This is additional alleged cover-up. and it is probably going to be the subject of a forthcoming amended complaint.
Final question for you, and I think John may have one too. Just final question for you. You allege in the complaint that I believe it is the sister of the victim who's being regularly harassed by potential current players. And in the complaint, it talks about injunctive relief. Are you seeking or will you be seeking any kind of protection order or any kind of a restraining order against those players or that school from engaging in that type of behavior?
It's an excellent question. I don't think I should comment on that at this time about our next steps in the litigation and what additional facts have been gathered since that allegation was made. So we'll leave it there.
All right. Attorney Shonda, I've got one final question for you. I'll let it go with this. You know how you go into a doctor's office and they always ask you, what's your level of pain through a 1 in 10? Reading through all of these allegations and the 200-page situation and the multiple lawsuits, on a scale of 1 to 10, where do you rank this?
On a scale of 1 to 10, on what measure?
Just on the allegations and what you've read about the incidents involved with it.
I think I can simply answer this by saying that I've handled a number of serious matters in my career. This is among the most serious that I've ever handled. And that's being borne out with the additional information that's been gathered since it was filed that is giving us a broader picture of potentially problematic conduct, and all of that will be the subject of current investigation and will be the subject of additional action.
Okay.
Attorney Subodhchandra, as this case moves forward, would you be willing to come back and join us at a future date as this continues to unfold?
Sure, at the appropriate times and appropriate junctures in the litigation.
Certainly appreciate your time.
If I could just say one last thing. Again, we strongly encourage victims to visit chandralaw.com and share their stories. It's been helpful, and you will not be alone.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Shonda. We appreciate it. We'll have you back on. Looking forward to having you back on in the future. And Todd, thanks for your thorough investigation, your research on this. Todd's going to be staying with me throughout the course of the morning. We're going to take a break. We're going to come back. Big weekend of football, and we'll discuss what the attorney had to say in post detail after these messages.